Thanks for tuning in to part two of our conversation with Matt Brinker, Managing Partner of Merchant. We're about to drop you back into our conversation about the metrics that matter, in particular, net new assets, before we go on to discuss the impacts of client experience on staff and how this may impact your business valuation. Enjoy the episode.
Yeah, so stay there for us. So we've got an audience that's US-based and Australian-based. So can you help define the net-net number? And in particular, just for our Australian listeners, imagine obviously the US model still has a lot of a revenue tied to percentage of AUM, right? So yeah. In the Australian model, there's quite a few firms that may not have percentage of AUM, so they're all flat dollar. So it's just probably helpful context there. But so net-net for you when you define it is not just are you growing and adding clients, but are you losing as well? And in a percentage-based AUM model, that's also, you know, funds as well, and net loss of funds or net growth of funds, right?
Yes. Yeah. So that's, yeah, you have it spot on, right? So that's, yeah, it's clients coming in, it's clients leaving, and then you have with your existing clients, whether they're in accumulation or distribution phase.
Yeah, which is huge.
Yeah,
because distribution phase is natural, especially if you've got an older book segment. But that goes to the point you were making before is, well, if you've got an older book segment, one, are you engaging the non-financial spouse? Because if your older book passes away and then you also lose the non-financial spouse because they fire you, then business valuation goes through the roof. But yeah, yes. Eventually your clients are going to get older. You're going to get older as a business as well. There must be something to be said on how you top up with either younger clients or through even your own internal management through younger advisors, which was your point of developing the next generation, right?
You're touching on an incredibly important point, which is this massive, massive wealth transfer that's taking place. And you know, when you see that business that may have the average client 65 and north, if there's not a very specific and actionable way of engaging in the next generation of those clients' children, those clients are going somewhere, right? When they inherit the money, those clients are going to go find the firm that is talking to them in the way that they want to be engaged. And all signs are pointing for that next generation of people that are going to be inheriting this wealth. They don't want our father's Oldsmobiles. You know, I mean, they want something very different. They want to engage with their money and their advisor in a way that is more truly aligned with their values, whether that's on the investing side, in terms of the underlying investments, but also, and look, I mean, you kind of start looking at how people do identify with brands around the world. And, you know, it's why even still today, people love wearing Nike. People still love wearing Lululemon. People love driving Tesla. You know, there is a status effect with the brands that we consume. And we want to be able to identify with the brands that we engage with. And there's no reason why financial services should be any different. And I do think that the wirehouses work really hard, and you see it in their marketing branding and Super Bowl, Super Bowl ads and online and everything else, and in copy, they're selling a persona and trying to find that brand value and identity with a JP Morgan or a Morgan Stanley or even a Goldman Sachs, right? We need to do a better job in our segment of wealth management, the independent channel, and you know, having brands and identities that the next generation of clients want to be associated with.
Yeah. So, you know, that would lean to sustainable growth across generations for time to come, right? Which is obviously really attractive for an investor. What I'm intrigued about, Matt, is obviously the client experience side of it is super important. Does having a client experience process underneath it tell you a bit about the staffing longevity and the staffing development in there as well? And because you've mentioned that, tell me what it tells you about the staff in the business, which is obviously an important factor in a business valuation as well.
Yeah, sure. I mean, like, you know, just, you know, we keep on, I think I'm dodging the question, and I'll finally answer it in terms of the client experience around directly impacting on valuation. And one thing that most firms challenge with is sort of extracting the lifestyle or the personality dependencies out of the business. And, when I'm looking at a business and, you know, everything starts and stops with the lead advisor, which means everything starts and stops with the lead advisor. And if that advisor wins the lottery on Sunday, doesn't come into the office on Monday, what is the value of the business that's left? And, everyone's been talking about team-based approach and, you know, this isn't anything earth-shattering. But I don't oftentimes we do run into those really lifestyle-centric organizations who have a little bit of a disconnect on why they're not getting the multiple that they think that they deserve. You sort of flip the coin, and so what are businesses doing that are mitigating a lot of that lifestyle risk and people dependency? And that is a function of a relatively consistent client experience, and which is impacted by one, the vision that the CEO sets, setting the actual details of the client experience. And that obviously can vary across the client segmentation, right? Ultra high net worth clients might have more estate and tax planning resources. Somebody with $1 million might have more, you know, just insurance and traditional financial planning components. Those businesses that have figured out how to bring a high degree of scale and repeatability consistently, consistency with the client experience that isn't necessarily dependent on one individual sitting in that meeting, but one or two, or it's one or two and it's tied to a fairly consistent process. Those firms have done a really good job of taking the people dependency component out of those firms, and they're worth more, right? And another little bit of alchemy that happens when there's a consistent client experience in place, is, try to say this as respectfully as possible, typically within wealth management firms, the advisors who are operating in those firms may or may not have the necessary skill set as the one or two chief rainmakers, or the advisors who can very quickly jump into a meeting and in under 30 minutes, connect with a client in meeting one and form that bond and start having that connection around what the client needs are and where they are financially, and clients start sharing some intimate things about their financial lives. Without a real process in place, it's really hard for younger advisors who are still learning that skill or may not even have that skill to be surrounded with a process, and particularly if they don't have the soft skills, the EQ, to be surrounded by a process or a system that helps them engage around those components of the client conversation. Like, most people can dive into, let me see your balance sheet, what's your income, what are your spending? Like, most people can, you know, plop that into a piece of software and spin out a report. But where that alchemy happens is where advisors are connecting with the software side of the client's lives and, you know, their money values and their personal values. Obviously Lumient does that in a very real way. And I've seen that when applied transforms the business. And, you know, if I'm looking at two businesses that does not have a consistent client experience, it's obvious, it's reflected in the numbers. And I'm going to get to your question on the staffing. I promise. You asked the question on the staffing. People want to work in a business that has order, right? That has some structure, has process. And I think generally people don't want to live in and work in a chaotic environment where, holy cow, clients coming in an hour. Like, where are
what
the
do
statements?
I do? What documents do
where,
I need?
Right, where are the statements? What's the plan? Right?
What system do I log into?
Yeah.
What am I drawing on the whiteboard? What questions do you want me to ask?
Yeah. Nobody wants to work in that environment. And, you know, particularly for those that are interested in career development and wanting to, you know, plug in to a firm, maybe be on the operational side, maybe learn the client experience, maybe understand the investment solutions. The way that you bring up that next generation of talent is that there's, you know, an actual infrastructure for them to start being educated and trained around. Otherwise, you know, I don't know what you have.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, it all comes down or back into a nicely tied bow, right? Because then they leave, and then you know, to your point, it all shows up in the numbers. So totally. If it's not showing up on revenue, it's showing up in staff turnover.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. That's the canary. The staff turnover is the canary in the coal mine.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Like, that would tell you a lot.
Why are you turning people over every 24 months?
Yeah. What tenure were they?
Yeah. Yeah.
What support did they have?
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah. The one aspect we haven't really dug into that you've mentioned a couple times here, so I've been dodging it on my side too, you've mentioned marketing and branding a couple times, which in traditional financial advice models, you know, it's probably, would I say it's relatively new concept, marketing, branding, going out, promoting yourself, social media, all that sort of stuff. It is, you know, a relatively new wave. Because the traditional way of growing businesses is word of mouth, right? You know, all the good lead advisors or principal advisors back home use that terminology. Just seem to find new referrals just because they're on the same golf course with their clients, whatever that might be. But marketing and branding, you've mentioned, plays a huge role in it. What is it you're looking for in marketing and branding?
Well, to your former point, you know, the referral growth model is great until you exhaust your sphere of influence. Inevitably, we do at some point. Some exhaust it sooner and some exhaust it, later as they're able to be out in the world and creating centers of influence. And that's fine. But marketing and branding is only matters if you understand really two fundamental things is, more than two fundamental, there are a few fundamental things. Who is my client and where do they live, right? Who is my client and where can I find them? Where do they live? Which means, you know, I think firms do a pretty good job of really sort of looking internally and understanding what are the sort of the demographics and the psychographics of clients that they crush, right? Like, you know, there's always that fat part of bell curve for most wealth management firms where, like, for some reason, I do really well with 47-year-old orthodontists that live in, you know, Sheboygan, Wisconsin, right? Well, then if that's the case, then we need to funnel and focus all of our conversations, energy, and marketing budgets to talking to orthodontists that are 47 years old, plus or minus, that they live in and around Sheboygan, Wisconsin. That's one element. And then the second element is, well, you better then have something to talk about. What do you have to talk about? People want to be in marketing and branding, and people are spending thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars a month on marketing and branding. But if we don't understand who we're talking to and we have nothing to say, then you're literally yelling into the wind. And I think a lot of advisors spend a lot of time yelling into the wind. And after 4 months, they go, this marketing and branding stuff just doesn't work. Right. And so, when you sort of think back again, what are we talking about and what are we saying? That again, there's a theme here. It reverts back to our client experience. Like, what do we do for our clients? What makes us unique? Whether that's on the investment side, because there's some really interesting, unique things that firms are doing on the investment side, all the way to, you know, just, you know, the client experience, whether it's behavioral focused, whether it's estate and tax planning, philanthropic management, right? There's so many things that firms do really, really well around their client experience.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, if we keep going back to the theme, it all shows up in the numbers, right? You're doing marketing and branding wrong. It's either showing up in lack of organic growth or high CAC, or cost of acquisition, right? Because you're just spending money for zero return. So it's going to show up on the balance sheet somewhere, right?
It will. Always does.
So, yeah. You know, it shows up. We've sort of spoken about a few metrics here, probably just to round out things, because it does sort of seem to come back to the business balance sheet or the financials and the stats. You know, we've mentioned things like getting across net new revenue, net new growth, staff retention being a big one, cost of acquisition being a big one, referrals being a big metric. Are there other metrics that off the top of your head you sort of look for that indicate whether or not they've got good CX and good business practice?
Yeah, again, and they're too quantitative, but they matter. You can Google search them. They're not that interesting, right? I mean, they're like revenue per employee, revenue per advisor, fee profile per dollar, right? Revenue per dollar. It's sort of, you know, M&A stuff 101. But they matter. They're important, right? Like they'll give you a tell into the operating scale. The productivity of are the advisors really spending more time in front of clients versus focused on the operations, right? There's some interesting indications of what's actually happening in the business from a process perspective, from an operational scale perspective. It's all, those are all just, you know,
I mean, they're great metrics, right?
They're great.
Like, yeah, you know, that people can get obviously lost in the numbers, but let's just take revenue per employee as an example, and I'll put my client experience spin on it, given my obvious bias. But yeah, revenue per employee, if it's low, tells us one of two things. Either you don't have an experience that supports every employee, that therefore they can adapt and generate revenue, or you're not supporting them to do that, or they're bad executors at it, and yeah, all are equally equally bad problems or equally big problems, right? And indicators of probably poor business health. So yeah, it all comes back to it.
It all comes full circle, my man.
Matt, mate, it's been a great conversation. Before we wrap it all up, as we do with all our business experts, we'd love to get a little bit Lumianty I think that's the verb we're using, a little bit Lumiancy with you, and get you to share a bit about yourself and through our values at Cards Experience. So for those listening on the podcast, I've got our 16 values cards up here. And Matt, I'm going to ask you, as I do with all our other industry experts, can you maybe tell the audience what's the one card or the top card that sticks out for you, and why is that important to you?
Yeah, I've spent a lot of time thinking about this. And it was really hard to come up with my singular card, because I think there's six on here that could and do shape how I think about just, you know, my day in, day out, you know, life with my family, my friends, my community, my business partners. But, you know, I think, you know, push comes to shove, I'm going with help others live a more purposeful life. And, you know, it's just, it's maybe just a reflection of where I am in the stage of my life. My kids are, my boy Austin's a freshman in high school. My daughter Alexandra is in seventh grade. I've got people in my life, that go beyond my immediate family, and friends that, I've taken a very purposeful, role in helping them sort of think through various stages of their lives, from a career perspective. I do a lot of volunteering. With my time, and those are all things for me that just are, you get a certain stage in your life and you sort of check a lot of boxes in terms of career success and financial success and everything else. Then, you know, the ability to look outward is an incredible, luxury, and it's actually, I think, an obligation. To people who are in relatively fortunate positions. It's a bit of an editorial, so I apologize, but it's a bit of an, I think it's a bit of an obligation to look outward and support, you know, other people to help them live a more a better life.
Matt, yeah, you don't need to apologize for it being an editorial. I think it's a great example of what drives you and what's really important to you. And, you know, it's your story at the end of the day, and we just want to be here to support it, mate. And we're grateful to put a nice little bow on it that you've shared some of your story with us today. It's been exceptional. We've covered a ton of topics. I've got a plethora of notes here, as I assume our audience has as well. But To sum it all up in a few key points, we've spoken a lot around how, given your background at Merchant, how you assess the quality of a business and the quality of the leadership of that business, because, you know, things like good culture tell you a lot about the longevity of a business, which is important from an investment standpoint. The impact of client experience on things like business growth, staff development, the sustainability of revenue and profitability for your business, as well as the impact on marketing and brand, and how that all comes back to showing up in the numbers on a balance sheet, which is obviously super important to everyone that's looking at them. So, Matt, I just want to say on behalf of our Lumiant audience, thank you so much for sharing those insights with us today. I'm sure they'll be extremely valuable.
Wow. You made me sound smart in that recap, man. I appreciate it. And I'm going to be in your neck of the woods. I know you're in Chicago now, but I'm going to be in your neck of the woods, Sydney, mid-October. So I look forward to seeing you in person.
Mate, I'll be there. Don't you worry about it.
All right, man. Thanks for the time, Mark.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Lumiant Live. If you really enjoyed it, we'd love if you could hit that subscribe button on your favorite podcast provider so you don't miss out on any of our upcoming episodes. Thanks again for tuning in.